We're honored to have closing remarks now by Commissioner Maureen Olhausen. Maureen's extraordinary career at the FTC began as a member of the staff at the Office of the General Counsel, including heading up the Office of Policy Planning, and culminated in serving as a commissioner and then acting chairman. Thank you for your service, Commissioner Olhausen.
Well, thanks so much for having me here to close out a very interesting day. I'm also about to close out a very interesting career at the FTC next week. After 6 years as a commissioner and more than 12 years in other roles at the agency, I can offer some broad perspectives on what the agency is meant to do and how to tell whether we are succeeding in that role the way Congress intended at our creation. Now, these are issues that I've spent many years thinking about, from my early days advising Commissioner Swindle to my time working on the FTC at 100 report as director of the Office of Policy Planning under Chairman Bill Kovacic to my time as a commissioner. In particular, as acting chairman of the agency, I had good cause to reflect seriously again on what we do at the FTC, our institutional strengths, and how to leverage successfully those strengths for the good of consumers and the country in the years ahead. And I'm pleased that Chairman Simons is also thinking deeply on these topics and getting wide-ranging input through this series of hearings. And I sincerely hope these insights, the insights the Commission gains through this process, will help ensure the FTC's future success. But how should we define success as an agency? In an influential article, former Chairman Kovacic and Professor David Hyman identify the three most important factors to predict long-term agency success: consistent political support, policy coherence, and capacity and capability to handle the agency's mission. I believe these factors are important as the Commission considers the path ahead. As a threshold matter, an agency needs consistent political support, or as Kovacic and Hyman call it, political implications. They note that this is the most important of the factors for success. In their words, an agency is doomed if it lacks a supportive constituency or if the performance of its duties generates crippling political opposition. More broadly, an agency will not be able to operate effectively if its structure raises serious doubts about its legitimacy or increases the vulnerability to political pressure that the performance of its duties will arouse. Now, this first factor speaks directly to the FTC's origins and the stability of its structure as a bipartisan entity. Now, the FTC was born from early 20th century dissatisfaction with the way the Department of Justice was enforcing or not enforcing the Sherman Act. And as many of you know, in the Gilded Age years preceding the FTC's creation, the country underwent a massive wave of corporate consolidation. In the decade straddling the turn of the 20th century, there were 42 deals producing companies controlling over 70% of their respective industries. During the peak of this merger boom, from 1898 to 1902, at least 303 companies disappeared each year, and in 1899, over 1,208 were merged out of existence. And for several years, the government offered essentially no meaningful response. Now, the leadership at DOJ was not entirely to blame for the situation. It was a product of many factors, including an underdeveloped understanding about the economic implications of corporate consolidations, political indifference, and a Supreme Court that had expressly called into question whether the Sherman Act applied to mergers. These circumstances triggered an era of public agitation that aided President Roosevelt in expanding the antitrust laws, pushing to establish the Sherman Act's coverage of consolidations, and culminated more than a decade later with Wilson's signing of the FTC Act and Clayton Act. I believe the current debate about concentration and the role of antitrust reflects a similar era of public agitation. It also calls for a deep understanding of the institution, the FTC, that arose out of this similar era 100 years ago. Now, interestingly, the turn of the 20th century consensus for additional competition enforcement didn't lead to a uniform vision for a new competition agency. Rather, two camps formed. The first believed Congress should create a new agency to be a law enforcer similar to DOJ, but politically independent and with flexible substantive jurisdiction to allow it to proactively shape business behavior. The second camp, on the other hand, wanted to move away from the DOJ model and create an independent policy body, similar to Roosevelt's new Bureau of Corporations within the Department of Commerce and Labor. This policy agency would have special power to work with the business community, research competition issues, then issue reports and regulations and guidelines that would help shape industry's conduct. The FTC was created as a compromise between these two views. We are an independent, bipartisan, policy-oriented, research-based enforcement agency. The bipartisan design insulates us to some extent from being buffeted by political winds. Combining this bipartisan leadership with the agency's research and policy functions results in a relatively steady and disciplined stewardship of our merger review mandate and conduct enforcement, which, other than some notable missteps about 30 years ago, has often been a source of broad political support over the last few decades. And I assume this support is at least in part because even the out-of-power party continues to have a serious voice in U.S. competition policy and enforcement decisions. Indeed, during my 15 months as acting chairman, the commission could only take action if there was bipartisan agreement. And notably, we were able to continue an active enforcement and policy agenda and had over 500 unanimous votes. This leads me to the next most important factor for agency success: policy coherence. The FTC's design offers strong policy coherence because of its dual mandate for competition and consumer protection. These are different but equally important complementary tools for the agency to help promote fairness in our markets and therefore promote consumer welfare. Each tool protects consumers in different ways and each has its limitations, allowing one to offer relief where the other cannot. Competition is the first line of defense. A competitive market is a welfare-enhancing one for consumers. Aggressive competitors fight for consumers using price and quality as their weapon, including the quality of service. They work hard to protect their reputations because they know that a dissatisfied customer can easily turn to alternatives. But there are limits to this. As former FTC Chairman Tim Uris once wryly observed, the commercial thief loses no sleep over its standing in the community. Some companies engage in fraud, dishonesty, unilateral breach of contract, or other conduct that hurts consumers, with little regard for their reputations or the possibility of being put out of business. Because a competitive market sometimes cannot discipline these behaviors, we also use our consumer protection authority. But these missions are aligned, which allows the agency to apply them cohesively and imbues all commission staff with a sense of common purpose: to protect consumers. I hope this singular focus on consumers will continue at the commission in future years, particularly because it has been a proven linchpin of policy coherence and cohesion throughout the agency's history. So we come to the third factor: agency capacity and capability. Now, capacity refers to resources, which in large part hinge on an agency's credibility with Congress. Capability, according to Kovacic and Hyman, is slightly different, turning on whether an agency has the tools to make good decisions and does so. And I'll focus the remaining few minutes of my remarks explaining why, based on our design protocol, the agency has been doing exactly what it was meant to do: identifying competition problems in the economy, developing proof of the problems, debating the evidence of harm and proper courses internally, and then leading by example outside the agency with every advocacy, enforcement, and regulatory tool at its disposal. And our efforts have paid off, though sometimes it takes a while. But that is often the risk of leading. The agency's design gives it the singular ability to identify a potential competition problem in the market, develop empirical research to determine whether the problem actually exists, and then plan and execute a multi-year advocacy and enforcement agenda to rectify the problem. In other words, the FTC is designed specifically to lead others in the continuous development of competition law to accurately reflect changing economic conditions. It's in the agency's DNA, so to speak, from the open-ended drafting of our statutory authority in Section 5 of the FTC Act to our research and report writing authority in Section 6 of the Act, which permits us to gather and compile information and make public such portions as are in the public interest. Now, the commissioners sometimes disagree about how the agency should pursue its mandate, but that debate, too, and the necessary negotiation and compromise that come with the commission structure is another invaluable part of our commission design. It is among the reasons studies have shown that the agency's merger enforcement does not wax and wane with the election cycles in Washington, D.C. For example, although you may be surprised to hear it, the number of our competition enforcement matters actually tied historic levels during my tenure as acting chairman, despite it being a time of pronounced political change. Using this process over the years, the FTC has made vital contributions in doctrinal gray areas. On the merger side, the agency has notably introduced new concepts or new ways of analyzing hospital mergers, potential competition issues, and dynamic markets. Now, our work involving merger work involving cluster markets is one such example. The notion that hospital mergers implicate a cluster of inpatient services is now so widely accepted it's rarely litigated. But the Commission has also recently challenged cluster markets outside hospital mergers, as in our 2015 successful challenge of the Cisco-US Foods merger, and then again in 2016 in our winning challenge in Staples Office Depot. Well, Staples Office Depot, Office Max, I think. And while I was acting chairman earlier this year, we alleged, and the district court subsequently found, that Williamson's proposed acquisition of Drew Marine likely would reduce competition in a cluster market of marine water treatment chemicals. On the conduct side, the FTC has been at the forefront of developing invitations to collude, the proper extent of competitor collaborations in cases like PolyGram, and of course, reverse payment settlement agreements. The agency also has had a major impact on developing the outer bounds of antitrust, particularly with respect to the scope of exemptions and immunities like NOR and state action, topics on which I have been particularly active. Antitrust doctrine evolves, and ideas can and should be debated in settings like these hearings. But debate alone is an insufficient ground for action. To make good decisions, the agency must test new ideas empirically and develop proof of actual competition problems in the economy. If there is such evidence, it should then consider the tools to best address it. Notably, most of our doctrinal contributions have depended on the broad use of all of our agency functions, research, advocacy, administrative litigation, and federal court enforcement. I thus urge the Commission to continue to strive to make decisions based on empirical foundations and to consider all of its tools if it finds evidence of harm to the competitive process that reduce consumer welfare. So I'll leave you with a few closing thoughts on what guidance past agency experience can offer for the future. First, the FTC is well suited to play a leadership role in large part because of its design, which has played a significant part in its contributions to difficult competition issues. It's afforded the agency bipartisan political support, a coherent policy framework to protect consumers with complementary tools, and the capacity and capability to invest in resolving novel competition issues with long-ranging plans relying on outreach, research, advocacy, and enforcement. And also, the real key to successful agency design, in my opinion, is the ability to attract and retain great people. And judging by the people I've met during my time at the FTC, and the enthusiasm they all bring to the job of protecting American consumers, I feel very confident of the agency's success in the future. Thank you very much.